On July 16, 1969, George Walker was just 2 weeks away from his 85th birthday. Mr. Walker was an immigrant to the United States from a German-speaking section of Russia and spent most of his life in this country working as a farmer and working in a factory and working in various roles, but by his mid-80s was living in a retirement center in the Front Range of Colorado. Still in good health, still very bright, and able to watch on television the historic events of that date, July 16, 1969, when Neil Armstrong, part of the Apollo 11 mission, took his lunar module, landed on the surface of the moon, and took those first historic human steps on the moon. Except Mr. Walker insisted it wasn't true. It's impossible. Nobody can go to the moon. It absolutely can't happen. His adult children tried to convince him otherwise, and so they showed him pictures and sat with him as the newscasts reviewed the tapes of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. But he said, no, it's all a fabrication. It was done in a Hollywood studio. You know, it's amazing with modern technology what they can do. So he had enough confidence in technology to be able to fabricate it, but not to be able to believe that it actually occurred. No argument, no explanation, no persuasion was able to change his mind. 7 years later, when he died on March 12, 1976, he still was convinced that no man had ever walked on the moon, which, when you think about it, actually is kind of far-fetched. That somebody could travel nearly 250,000 miles, land a little machine on the moon, walk around, and then come back again to tell about it? I mean, who can believe that such a thing would occur? Well, actually, I do. I believe that it really occurred. Oh, I know that in science, something should be repeated to prove that it actually is credible. I actually believe that not only it happened in 1969, but that it could happen again. I think it probably will happen again. I don't know when, I don't know how, but I believe. Not because of blind faith, but because of the evidence. The evidence persuades me that it's true. And I suppose that all of the same things could be said about Easter. It is a stretch to think that a man truly dead could come back to life again and be alive and healthy. And if that's scientifically true, then you would expect that in all of the years that have gone in between, that it would have been repeated at least once or more often to validate its credibility. So what do you think? What do you think about the Easter story? Do you believe it or not? On that first Easter, there were three different responses to the resurrection. Actually, they established the options that to this day are pretty much the only options of how to respond to what happened on Easter Sunday. The first option was the option of those Roman soldiers who had been assigned to guard the grave of Jesus. And it was fear. I'm a little uncomfortable saying that it was an option they chose because I don't think that they thought it through. They were just afraid. After all, there was a violent earthquake. For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were as white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. I can understand why they were frightened. After all, in just a few moments' time, all kinds of strange and scary events took place. There was an earthquake that shook the ground. The crust of the earth split open. There before them was the brightness like a strike of lightning before their eyes, and a supernatural being, an angel, dazzlingly white like snow, talking to them while sitting on a rock. It was incredibly frightening, enough to terrify even experienced and veteran Roman soldiers. But what was really happening here? What was behind these cataclysmic events? I will tell you that God was intervening in human history, that it was a clash between heaven and earth, between good and evil, between life and death, that God was doing something that had never been done before, and it would seem could otherwise never have been accomplished, to bring a completely dead man back to life again. That in order to do it, God shook up the whole order of nature, that he brought powers to bear greater than we could probably define or understand, to reverse what has always been the order of things, that those who are alive become dead, but not that those who are dead become alive again. It's no wonder the soldiers were terrified. But fear is different from faith. They attested to the historicity of what happened. They knew what they saw and they reported it to the officials. But that doesn't mean that they believed in the sense that they had an interpretation that involved God in what had occurred. There is not the slightest hint that these soldiers ever became believers or Christians or followers of Jesus Christ. At best, they were just very frightened observers. Quite a contrast to the women who showed up on Easter Sunday morning, who chose the second option of faith. Faith, not fear. It's not that they weren't afraid, because they were afraid, but somehow their fear was overwhelmed by their faith. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. And then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee, and there you will see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy. Afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to his disciples. So yes, they were afraid, but there was a difference. They had a faith that was bigger than their fear. Oh, I know it could be argued that they were somehow predisposed to believe. They were Jesus' friends. That on and off over a 3.5-year period, they had heard his teaching, and that he had predicted that he would go to Jerusalem, die a violent death, come back to life again. And so having heard this, that was why they interpreted what they saw the way they did. Except that doesn't fit the facts. The facts say that they really didn't think he was alive, nor did they expect him to be alive. To the contrary, they had come to finish the embalming of his body because they expected that he was going to stay dead. But when they saw the tomb empty, when they too felt the earthquake, when they too encountered the angel, they had enough evidence to believe. Doesn't mean they believed everything all at once, but they believed that Jesus had actually come back to life again. And then God did something that God often does. He fed their faith. He offered them more evidence. He said that you will actually see Jesus alive yourselves. You're going to see him. And that promise then triggered more faith. And then there was a whole continuum. Evidence led to faith, and faith led to evidence, and evidence led to faith. And it grew and it increased until they were transformed. And this is the way that faith usually works. I've seen it. I've seen it thousands of times, where God intervenes into the life of someone who is confused and troubled and offers his truth and a bit of his power. And someone says, "I believe. I believe," and then that triggers more of God's truth and God's greater power. And someone says, I believe. And then it increases and it increases. These women, the bottom line is they believed. They believed that Jesus was dead, and they believed that he was now alive, and they believed that God had accomplished a spectacular, spectacular miracle. They believed even though they had not yet seen Jesus for themselves. They believed even though there was much more to come. They believed enough that they were filled up with joy and to the point that they ran to tell others. They could not contain the secret. But understand, this was more than a head decision, something more than a matter of intellect. Their faith was connected to joy. They were transformed by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Something most unusual happened. They showed up that morning with despair. They ran away in happiness. They came thinking that this was the end, only to discover it was the beginning. They came convinced that the prayers that they prayed were not answered, that God either didn't care or God didn't hear or that God didn't respond. Now they were discovering that God had an answer for their prayers far more impressive than anything that they had ever asked. They came estranged in their relationships from friends and family over the events of the previous days. And now they were running to have their relationships restored. They were different, transformed, completely different. All of this didn't happen simply because they acknowledged the factual historicity of one dead man coming back to life again. This was something far greater that was going on. Their faith to believe the resurrection had connected them to God. It's like an electric cord with a plug that's put into an outlet and it connects to the power of electricity and then it runs through that cord and makes things happen that otherwise never would have happened. What do we compare all of this to, this whole process of faith and transformation? Perhaps you're familiar that along some of the river valleys of East Africa, there is a blindness that is common from infancy, and that it can be prevented with 50 cents worth of American medicine. And so medical teams, ophthalmologists and other physicians and technicians and nurses have gone there and asked parents if they can put a couple of drops in each of the eyes of newborn babies. Some say no, for it's hard for them to imagine that drops of solution from a total stranger could make that kind of difference. But then there are others who take a leap of trust and say yes, only to discover after a period of time that their children do not go blind like the neighbor children. And that causes them to wonder if they should trust these Western strangers all the more, particularly when they come up with something else that seems bizarre. And that is that by sticking a needle inside of the flesh of their children, that they can prevent them from having diseases like mumps and measles and other life-threatening childhood ailments. And there are some who trust again and discover that their children live when other children die. And then in the medical team, there are public health officials who come up with something that is crazier still. They say that the water that they drink that looks perfectly good, crystal clear, has little enemies in it called bacteria that can make you very sick. And that if you can either clean up the source of the water or if you will boil the water before you drink it, that you will be much healthier. It's hard to believe that. But there are some who do believe. And they discover huge differences. They don't get sick as often. Or they don't get sick at all. They're able to sleep better at night. They're able to work better during the day. As they sleep better and work better, they're able to make more money. As they make more money, they're able to provide for their families. As they provide for their families, family relationships are improved. It has an impact on marriage and parenting. Whole communities are different than they were before. Because it is a process of a little bit of trust that brings a power that increases the trust that brings more power until it eventually is absolutely transforming. Now compare all of this to Christian faith. The faith in the resurrection of Jesus Christ starts with a decision to accept or reject the truthfulness of Easter. And that those who accept the truthfulness plug into God, tap into His power. And believing that, then begin to believe that when Jesus died on the cross, it was not just the execution of some martyr in ancient time, but that God was doing something supernatural in all of this. And that what God was doing was bringing a way to atone, to pay for human sin. And then believing that, to believe that Jesus died for your sin, my sin. And then having accepted that, to be convinced that this power actually guarantees a place forever in heaven on the other side of our own death, that we too will become alive. And then convinced of that, we're able to move to faith and trust that the power of God is not just for some distant eternity, but for here and now. That our problems can be solved, that we can be purposeful in life, that we can be a benefit and blessing to others, that we can stand for what is true and what is just, that we can pray prayers that will be heard and that will be answered, that this power of the resurrection of Jesus Christ can come into our families and our jobs and our schools and our neighborhoods, that it is transforming, it is wonderful, it is amazing, it is supernatural, it is joy. That's what the women and the men of Easter experience: transformation and joy. The kind of transformation and joy that still is available for us today. For it rings down through the centuries that what was true for them is true for us. Fear, faith, or tragically a third option that was adopted by the leaders in the city of Jerusalem. They decided that Easter was a fake. Some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.'" Now, if this report gets to the governor that you guards fell asleep on duty, don't worry, we will satisfy him and we'll keep you out of trouble. And so the soldiers took the money and they did as they were instructed. These leaders decided that the Easter story was not true. They refused to believe, not because they lacked evidence, but because they had already made up their minds. Made up their minds in advance not to believe. And once they decided not to believe, then they were willing to conspire, they were willing to lie, they were willing to bribe, they were willing to do whatever they needed to do in order to reinforce their unbelief. Their decision resulted in two awful consequences. Number one was personal. They missed out in tapping into the power of God, and they did not experience this effervescent joy of God that was bubbling up in people all around Jerusalem. They missed it forever. The second consequence was that they set a precedent, an option for others down through the centuries to also say, "It's a fake. Easter's a fake. It didn't happen." It's in the same category with Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and other fictions and myths. But frankly, fakery is not a reasonable option. I'll tell you that the evidence of the truth of Easter is powerful and significant. That the credibility of the truthfulness of the story of Jesus Christ is not limited to the Bible, but there are secular, historical, contemporary sources. That the eyewitnesses were hundreds in number, that their stories were compatible, that is something amazing to happen, and that when threatened by the Roman authorities and told to recant or die, they were willing to die rather than change their story, that they had seen the risen Christ. And if evidence from then is not sufficient, there are hundreds of millions of people who today, as Christians, will gladly say that the power of Jesus Christ and his resurrection is here now and is no less than it was then, that their prayers are heard and answered, that their lives are changed, their sins are forgiven, their relationships are transformed, their destiny is guaranteed in heaven. Today, it still works. That this is no fake. So what do you think? What do you think about Easter? Do you believe it or not? Do you believe that Jesus died on the cross for you and for your sins? Do you believe that God brought Jesus fully back to life again on Easter Sunday morning? Do you believe that the same power of God can and will transform your life and destiny forever in heaven, but not just then and there, but here and now as well? Do you believe? I think you do. I hope you do. Believe not just the historical facts, but connect to the God who made Easter happen. Be transformed all of life, trusting Him. No fear. No faith. Just faith. Easter. Believe it. Father, look into our souls and hear our hearts as we say, we believe. We believe. We trust you and we ask that you will grow our faith, that we may be transformed as they were transformed, and that the joy of Easter then may be the joy of our lives today through Jesus Christ, our risen Lord.